I'm Sarah Zaslaw. This is the ASO on GPB. Stephen Mulligan is the assistant conductor of the Atlanta Symphony and music director of the Atlanta Symphony Youth Orchestra, both since 2017. Before this, he held a similar pair of positions in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And Stephen Mulligan studied at Yale and the Peabody Institute. And before all this conducting, he grew up in Baltimore playing violin. Stephen, great to meet
you. Great to meet you, too.
So where did conducting seep into your life? That's not something you take lessons on as a kid. And even if you did, you wouldn't have an instrument.
Totally. I was certainly dreaming about it from a young age. I would have these experiences in school chorus and youth orchestra where I would have some ideas about, you know, if I were up there, I would want to do something different. It wasn't until my grad studies at Peabody that I was formally studying conducting. Before that, I was getting together ensembles by myself and trying to figure out a lot by talking with conductors, and I would make videotapes and reading books and everything, but I didn't really start studying formally until graduate school.
And while we're sweeping through your earlier life, tell me about your travels to Finland.
Oh, yeah. So I took a year off, actually, in college to sing in the Whiffen Poofs, which is that very old a cappella group that Cole Porter was in. But one of the luxuries of that year off was also to prepare a big senior project on Sibelius's tone poem Tapiola. I went to Finland on a Mellon Forum grant and studied some of the manuscripts at the Helsinki University Music Library, which are amazing. He had some image about, like, he gets these little musical kernels from heaven, and they're scattered on the page like a mosaic, and it's his job to organize them. So I got to see those, and then I also got to go and visit his composition retreat, Ainola. It's in the middle of the woods, north of Helsinki, and this piece, Tapiola, that I was researching is about Tapio, is this spirit of the forest. So I wanted to sort of immerse myself in this state of mind. What I didn't know is that at the time of year that I went, it's closed to the public. So I took the train from Helsinki to Järvenpää. But when I got off the bus in the town, there was no bus going to the house. There was no nothing. In fact, it was just snowing. And I was like standing around like a fool. But I decided, like a brave fool, that I would walk there. So I actually walked to Ainola, to his composition house, and I hopped the fence and went up to the house and sort of had my little moment communing with Sibelius and the Finnish woods. Of course, it was freezing cold, but it was totally worth it. And the funniest thing about this story is that when I met Robert Spano a few summers later in Aspen, it turns out he's done exactly the same thing. We realized it after we had known each other for a while, but I was telling the story, and he said he did the same thing. So I wonder how many other, you know, Sibelius devotees in the world have, like, made this pilgrimage only to find that there's no bus running, and they have to walk through the snow to get there.
The townspeople are like, oh, there goes another fool conductor.
Yeah. Exactly.
Stephen Mulligan, as the new music director of the Atlanta Symphony Youth Orchestra, you are coming with a lot of experience conducting teens already. How is that different from working with professionals?
One of the biggest challenges that I have with young people is reading the room and sensing their mood and helping to either, how do I put this? Like helping them to come out of their shells when they're nervous, and on the other hand, helping to enforce a disciplined approach when that's required. So when I first met ASYO, for example, you know, I was really impressed by the culture, the disciplined culture that Joseph Young had set up when he was here and Jerry Flint before him. The students were so respectful and quiet. And the second that I gave a comment, all the pencils came out. And I really appreciated that. I mean, that makes your life so much easier as a conductor. However, there were some times, in particular, I remember the sound check rehearsal before our very first concert, where you could feel the orchestra sort of go into its shell. And, you know, it comes out physically, like in people's posture and how much bow they're using and how deep a breath they're taking. And so I think a lot of my work when I started here was helping some of the teenagers to feel more at ease and confident with what they're doing. Then, of course, if you go too far in that direction, you lose their attention. And so you have to set boundaries and how to ride that fine line between relaxed confidence and discipline and focus. So you have more responsibility to make them feel comfortable and confident.
That's really nice.
I get some crazy suggestions from them. Mr. Mulligan, are we going to do Mahler 5 next year? You know? No.
Stephen Mulligan, tell me about the art of conducting a live orchestra along with a film. What are the skills that go into that? This is not your own interpretation.
No, certainly not. I should say that the two films that I did this year, we did not use a click track. It's probably a different experience. You know, you have an earpiece in that is clicking along with the pulse the entire time. I've never done that. I did the first Harry Potter movie and the original Star Wars movie this year. And the way that you can sync the music with the film without the click track is that I have a visual guide. It's a tablet or a monitor in front of where my score is. And there's a system called punches and streamers that helps you to sync the music with the movie. A punch is basically a flash of a white circle in the middle of screen, and it's sort of a confirmation that that's where a pulse was. So if you switch into a fast tempo, for example, and this happens frequently in these movies where there's some suspenseful music, and then the battle starts, and you've got to get into the new tempo, you'll get maybe 4 or 8 punches in a row to help confirm that your tempo is indeed fast enough for the battle scene.
Like a visual metronome.
A visual metronome, exactly. And streamers are, if you can imagine, a colored line progressing slowly from the left side of the screen, and you know that when the streamer hits the right side of the screen, some event happens. For example, the Death Star blows up, you know. And that was a stressful one to synchronize because the last battle scene in the first Star Wars movie goes on for a long time, and it's so easy to get behind because the passage work is incredibly complicated. I mean, the poor strings have so many notes. It's hard for brass, hard for percussion. I mean, it's really tricky music, and you've got to get to the end of it such that the final tam-tam crash and the big explosion of the Death Star happens at the right moment. So, you know, the streamers, when they start going across the screen, you know that you better hurry up so that you can synchronize that moment precisely. Then there are other parts in the movies where it doesn't have to be absolutely exact. I think about my favorite scene from the first Harry Potter, which is when he's sort of sneaking around the library after hours. And a lot of it is atmospheric, but then there are these little jump scare moments. So during the atmosphere, you have a little bit of room to breathe. But then you've got to make sure that you're on it for when the scary face jumps out, you know. It's very difficult, and you have to have control of the orchestra. There can be no doubt in your mind about where and when things need to happen.
Do you enjoy it, or is it stressful, or?
Both. Harry Potter was particularly difficult, but I like the technical challenge. I think it's good for conducting chops to have to do this kind of thing. One of my first professional gigs was doing the Nutcracker 17 times with a professional dance company. And I remember feeling like if I can't get the tempos, then the dancers are going to be in pain. When you're doing ballet or a film, you must be able to achieve the tempos precisely. So it's really good for your conducting chops. But for that same reason, it's stressful. And there were certainly performances where I felt like I did better than others, and I look forward to the challenge of the second Harry Potter and the second Star Wars next year, because I know I'll probably be better and we'll be more ready this time.
Great. What sounds like the primary description of an assistant conductor is to assist at rehearsals and to be ready to step in at a moment's notice just in case. But years can go by with no need for an assistant conductor to substitute, and then, wham, a bad flu season or just bad luck for the scheduled conductor can mean a lot of excitement for you. And I gather it's been that kind of season.
Yes.
In the space of less than 2 months, mm-hmm. you got to conduct 3 programs mm-hmm. on the main classical series.
Yeah.
Starting with Robert Spano coming down with something in the middle of a program in
yes.
January. What
yes.
happened? How did you find out? How did you feel?
I was backstage before the concert started, and Robert didn't look well, but he said he would go on. So Robert did the first half on Saturday night, and he came back downstairs, and he didn't look well at all. And we had a little conference, and Robert decided that he was not up for the second half. He turned to me, and he said, "I'm sorry, and thank you." And so then I had about 10 minutes to get ready for the Beethoven Fifth Piano Concerto. But, of course, I had been in the rehearsals all week, so I knew how the piece was set up. I didn't have really any time to think. The soloist, Jorge Osorio, came and said, you know, he smiled and he said, you know, "Do you need anything?" And I think I asked him to play a few passages for me, and then it was time. And Evans went on stage and apologized to the audience that I was not in a tuxedo.
Oh, I was going to ask. I thought maybe you just kept one on the back of the closet door all the time.
Now I do.
What were you wearing?
I had a suit on, you know. Evans said something to the audience and everybody laughed. And then I went on and it was over before I knew it. And the great thing about it was that I could sense just in the orchestra's demeanor and Jorge too, just this like warmth and support of like, you got this. I was nervous, but it's almost like you don't have time to be nervous in that point because there's a job to do and you have to focus. That was really wonderful. And then we had to do the whole concert the next day in Athens. So I stayed up for a few hours and studied the first half of the program. Got a few hours of sleep, got up early, studied more, went to Athens, did the concert. You know, it went well, and I was a little bit in disbelief, honestly. But it was a wonderful experience and definitely a confidence boost to know that it's possible, you know.
And then the following week, Robert Spano was still not well, so you had a little more warning.
Right. So to continue the story, after that Sunday performance, Evans said, "I'll call you by tomorrow afternoon to let you know if you're doing this week." And then I went home and immediately started studying the next program, which was an all Beethoven concert. And luckily, I had done Beethoven's First Symphony before, but I didn't know the two piano concertos as well. So I started studying. Evans called me on Monday afternoon to say, "You'll be starting rehearsals tomorrow morning this week. Is there anything you need?" And I said, "Could somebody please get me groceries for me? Don't have any food in the apartment and I have to study." Then this time I took the whole week of rehearsals, which is a very different experience than stepping in mid-concert. On the one hand, it's easier because you get a chance, obviously, to do it like four times before the concert. On the other hand, you have to make all of the musical decisions and you have to set up the piece. So it's a different challenge. And that's really tricky when you don't have that long to prepare, because especially in Beethoven, you have to make some decision about the length and shape and articulation of every single note.
Did the fact that two of the pieces are a concerto with a soloist who has some say and opinions also simplify your task or make it more complicated?
Definitely simplified, for sure. That was great.
And then, a few weeks later,
the Hungarian conductor Nanasi was here to do a program including Strauss's Heldenleben. And unfortunately, he fell ill in the first rehearsal at the break. So he basically took the orchestra through the piece once. It was very exciting. And then I went to speak with him at the break, which I usually do with guest conductors, just to say hello and to let them know how the balance is in the hall. And he was not well, and he asked to be taken to the ER. He was afraid of a heart problem, but he's okay. The advice was for him to not continue the week. So in the middle of that rehearsal, I got up and did the rest of the rehearsal on Heldenleben. Let me just say that this is a massive piece, and after the rehearsal, I said I would be willing to do Heldenleben, but way more comfortable if we could switch it out for another Strauss tone poem that I felt more confident with. And everybody agreed that that would be appropriate given how wild and busy the year has been for me.
And there was also a sick concertmaster with a big violin solo in that piece.
That's right. So David Kushron was also sick, and Heldenleben, you know, the concertmaster has this huge extended solo, sort of portraying the hero's wife. And Justin Bruns, our associate concertmaster, was subbing for David as I was subbing for Nanasi. So I was very grateful that in the third time that I had to step in, I was able to actually have a piece that I wanted to do. That was very nice. That day was also crazy because that morning we had had a rehearsal on one of our young people's concerts. And that night I had a youth orchestra rehearsal. So I did three services that day and had to get up the next morning and do two rehearsals the following day, which is why I said, can we please do something that I know like the back of my hand? The schedule is crazy.
And there's no backup to the backup. The buck stops with you.
Yeah, I do wonder what would happen. Hopefully we won't have to see.
How do you make it through a day like that physically with three rehearsals of three different reps? Well, maybe mentally it's harder. I don't know.
Mentally it's harder, yeah. Physically I'm okay, but I remember going home and just my mind was spinning. And it's hard to sleep. And in these situations, in all three of them, what I've had to do is just to trust myself, you know, and say, you know, you can do a little bit of good hard work during the week of a concert, but more than anything, you have to be in the right state of mind and trust yourself. And the preparation has to come before, of course, ideally.
Stephen Mulligan, thanks so much.
Thank you.